Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 585, a new release for you. How about that? How exciting for not just the listeners, but for Pete Davidson.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's a palindrome. It's a milestone. It's a new release. I mean, this is quite the episode.
It's like old times, man.
The king, I know, it's weird.
The king of Staten Island. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us while you're there. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Of course, find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group is called the League of Show Sharers because we're hoping if you've been kind enough to join the group, perhaps you'll share an episode from time to time. So your friends can discover us. People who were kind enough to share the show this week, Heather Sachs. And I noticed when I was collecting the League of Show Sharers on Heather's, she had shared an episode. And I guess it worked because one of her friends had listened. And then her friend was like, "They said your name. That's so cool."
That's awesome.
So see what happens if people will listen and then they'll think you're cool because they don't know that we're not that big of a deal. So to them, it's very exciting.
Right.
Elevates you within your friend circle. Other show sharers, Librarian Cynthia Travis Teewitt, Carl Clarkson, Chris Sanders, Gabriel Lugo, Ryan Terry, Chris Williams, Chris Valls, no relation, Ron Johnson, Chris Magic Man, again, no relation, Tammy Sherman Powers, Julianne Jordan, Brent Smith, Griffin Fox Smith, Ralph Tribble, Lane Levanway, and Glenn Cougar Mellenbrewer. And I...
My favorite. That's my favorite name.
I want to take a moment to for someone who isn't on our official League of Show Sharers list this week.
Wait a minute.
And this will be... you know how we have the Brad Hyen rule? Right?
Sure.
Which is,
yeah,
you don't get to be counted as having joined the League of Show Sharers if it's an episode you were actually on, right? Like that's the Brad Hyen rule.
It's law, yes.
Right.
So I'm actually going to talk about somebody who is not on the list this week and they weren't on the episode last week. So it's the inverse of the Brad Hyen rule. And it's Linnea Thunsell got married, and so I'm giving
Her
a pass for not having shared, but I'm still going to give her a shout-out because she got married, and she's now Linnea Wynn. So congratulations on your nuptials, and on behalf of your husband, it's probably for the best that you didn't share the episode last week.
She's like, wait.
He'd be like, wait, we got married and you had time for that?
Well, congratulations. And now you can enter every room going winning.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations. I saw the posts on Facebook and all that good stuff. So congratulations.
Yeah, so we want to send some congratulations to her. And it's also a nice way to torment Brad Hyen. So it really checks both boxes.
I just can't win in this house. Like, it doesn't matter what time I do this podcast, is those children refuse to not... It's funny. My wife has often said these are her daughters because when she was a kid, she was just a loud kid, just running around the house yelling and screaming for no reason. No, like you I don't know if you can hear it.
Oh, I can hear it.
The oldest is like yelling for the dog. I have an 800 foot square house. It's not a big house. So he's either outside or in the same room with her. Like that's kind of not always out
right here.
Yeah, he's like, good Lord, just let me go back to sleep, will you? I also wanted to give a shout out to a new League of Show Share member, Matt Leong, who is just this weird cross platform of my life right
like,
now.
I'm like, are you calling him weird? Welcome to the League of Show Sharers.
No, you're
weird.
You're weird.
Well, he is listening to this podcast, Tom.
Touche.
That is also true. So I have, you know, I'm friends with Spath and all those guys. And through that group is this guy, Matt, who it turns out I went to high school with all of his siblings, not him, but all of his siblings. And so he joined this week. And it was just this weird moment of what is the cross contamination of personal life and podcast life that has finally it's happened.
Welcome, Matt.
Yeah, welcome, Matt. He's a good dude. He's a very nice guy.
Should I have brought someone to mention that didn't share the episode?
Yeah, it's like a show and tell episode.
Has some weird exception. Yeah. I would like to...
Nope, too late.
Oh.
You missed your window.
Yeah, moving on.
Yeah, we don't want your pity. And besides, you probably would have just been Brad, and he doesn't deserve it. So also don't forget we have a Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month you can get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and that's greatly appreciated. So anyway, there's all of that. Let's dig into the King of Staten Island.
So I completely forgot that this was being made. I think with everything that's been going on, do we know how long this was completed before release?
I don't think it sat on the shelf. Like I think it pretty much ended up going to VOD when it would at the same time that it would have been released theatrically.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
It was at South by Southwest in March of this year. So I mean, it went to the festival and it must have just gotten picked up and it was ready for release and all the stuff went down. So obviously a very bad timing for release in theaters, but this one went complete VOD. There was a snafu at Universal where it was going to be on like 100 screens, I believe, all drive-ins, and then they pulled them. And so people had already bought tickets and stuff. So they were very upset and it was just a total internal snafu. Cause like Judd Apatow is like, no, this was supposed to only go VOD. Someone internally signed it up for theaters, but they pulled it, you know, the day before or whatever. So, but yeah, they went straight VOD with this one. And yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat, though, Joe, because earlier this year when people were talking about it coming out, I'm like, I mean, if you don't follow the festival buzz, and at this time I hadn't, and I was just like, what is this movie? I had no idea this was coming out. And then I was like, oh, Pete Davidson.
So do you like Pete Davidson?
No. Well, did I like Pete Davidson or do
prior,
I? That's the
prior
question.
To this.
No, I've not ever really been a fan of him on SNL. I don't think he's that funny, and I have questioned for a long time why they keep him around. The only thing I could figure out is maybe because he's a friend and all of his issues, maybe they're like, yeah, probably not the best time to fire this guy. But like, I feel like he kept getting chances, like, and he keeps sticking around the show, and then they put him on in limited capacity. I mean, my heart goes out to anyone having troubles and such, but I'm just saying they've fired other people before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've never really been a fan of his. But then I saw this movie, and whoa, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, to me, just to put this simply, like, I believe this is his Punch Drunk Love, which was Adam Sandler's coming out party to, like, wow, this guy can act. I thought he was phenomenal in this movie, and I'll just leave it at that for now.
Funny,
Tom,
what
is your standpoint on Pete Davidson prior to this?
I have a slightly inverse opinion in that I like him on SNL.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think... Pete Davidson is a very divisive performer, and I really don't understand why people like there are people that have just a palpable hatred for the dude. And
well, he's got a punch face.
And I
mean, he looks like a douchebag. He has this thing where he's got this swag. He used to have a tattoo on his chest saying that swag would never die. I mean, that's pretty douchey. he carries himself and looks and acts like a douche. And like, I mean, I thought he was great in this movie, but he just is one of these people where you're like, that's not, to me at least, I watch him on SNL, I'm like, that's, you're not funny.
So, okay, but here's the thing.
I'm giving you an explanation, though. I'm just trying to answer, you know what I mean?
No, I know. And I think it's an age thing because imagine yourself being 45, 50 years old in 1975. Wouldn't you probably have had the same reaction to Bill Murray?
Or Eddie Murphy?
I could see that, but I would never put him in the talent category of the comic stylings of Bill Murray. Never.
I don't think he's as funny as Bill Murray, but just the visceral reaction so many people seem to have to the guy, I'm like, and their complaints about him so often, I'm like, there are so many, not just comedians, but SNL comedians that you could hang that label on. Chevy Chase is a douchebag, but he's funny, and or at least he was, and
he was funny.
but you know what? But like with Bill Murray, he always had that swagger and that cocky attitude and that douchiness to him. But to me, like he backed it up, like he owned it, and that was him. See, I feel like Pete Davidson is doing that, but I don't know, it doesn't seem natural to me. I feel like he's almost emulating that, and it's not a thing that he has. I mean, that's just how it comes off.
So here, you are not wrong, but it's the same thing. It's the same quality because Bill Murray had that douchebag, swagger, cocky attitude, but he still had that heart of gold. Mm. And I think, but Pete Davidson is the exact same thing, just in 2020.
Yeah, he's the millennial version of that.
He's the millennial version of Bill Murray.
And I think that like a lot of that anger that's directed at him is this whole millennials are ruining the world thing, and he kind of becomes like that incarnate for a lot of people.
I will say the way he dressed in this movie drove me insane. Like his style of dress just like going to that baseball game in like gym shorts and a button-up short sleeve goofy ass t-shirt and slides drove me bonkers.
That's his thing, yep. Though that's what I'm saying. That's why I think people it's like that's one reason people don't like him, is because it's his like style. It's his style, you know. It's the style of like, don't do your hair when you get up, don't put on any nice clothes, mismatch your clothes, put on goofy, like it's that I don't care attitude, because it's like I don't care, I'm so cool, it doesn't matter. And I think that frustrates people because there's certain people that can do that and they look like a model, like they can do that and you're just like, damn, they're awesome, they can, you pull that off. And there's people that just look goofy.
Yeah, but you know? But I would like, also make the argument of judging by the caliber and status and success of the women he's dated.
Absolutely.
Like it's clear.
Yeah, you can't really, it's Ariana Grande and Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, it's clear.
Like two of the back-to-back ones. It's like, wow. Okay.
So Kate Beckinsale,
clearly.
Yeah.
And Ariana Grande is, I mean, she's not a joke. Like she is a top.
She's the female Pete Davidson.
Well, she's insanely successful, is my point. And,
yes,
and,
right.
And
right. No, she's just so annoying. She's like the Justin Bieber female equivalent.
No. But again, I think Kevin, you're sliding into middle age because it's not like I'm listening to her records, but I think that it's, she's just not for you. You know what I mean? She's just not your thing. She's not my thing either.
Right.
But you can't argue with the fact that she's sells records. Or at least sells, you know, streams.
Oh, yeah. I never will. I'm always able to step back and admit things like that. So just because I don't like someone, I'll never say like they're not successful. I'll never say other people don't like them. And I'll never fault other people. Like if that's your thing, fine. I'm just saying like, and I think you're right, Tom. I think I'm just grown up. I'm at that age where now like those young whippersnappers, like the stuff people are listening to, I'm like, that music's crap.
Yeah.
Their styles, you know,
the
I'm just.
Culture's starting to shift beneath your feet. Yeah.
Right.
And,
right. So, yeah.
And get used to it. Because it's not going to stop.
there's no end in sight.
I will also say, in terms of the movie, so my reaction is a little bit different. Overall, I enjoyed the movie, and I thought Pete Davidson was really good in it. I'm hesitant to say that he's a great actor or that he's going to have a huge movie career based off of this film, just because this film has so many autobiographical elements that I question you know, it's not like he had to dig very deep for a lot of the, I mean, these are deep and personal issues that helped create who he is for better or worse. So I don't mean it's not deep in that regard, but from an acting standpoint, it's not like he got lost in a character. I mean, this is very much just an ever so slightly fictionalized version of himself.
Let me play devil's advocate though, real quick.
Okay.
I can see what you're saying, how it'd be like, well, yeah, he's basically playing Pete Davidson. I've seen some people refer to it as 75% his life, and then the other 25% is the fictionalized part. But the thing is, sometimes if a person tries to do that, they could be trying too hard and it could not seem natural.
Oh, sure.
Sometimes I think it could be very difficult to play yourself and to make it seem like you're just doing that. And so the way he does it in this movie, I feel, is effortless. And I just, again, like, I want to clarify, I think he's amazing in this movie. I loved him in this movie, and I'm not a fan of him.
Yeah.
So just like with Melissa McCarthy, because that's probably the closest example, like, I've never been a fan of hers. Like, the thing I liked her best in was The Heat, and that's about it. And I eventually saw Spy, and that was pretty funny. But when I saw that Can You Ever Forgive Me, I'm like, wow, she's phenomenal in that movie. So I'm not above like saying like this person that I'm not a fan of is excellent in something. And that this movie did that to me, to where now I may even see him differently on SNL.
Right.
Because I'm like, wow, he was so good. He may have shifted my opinion a bit.
So here's the thing on SNL is he doesn't do characters. He's never really in sketches. He's always
it's
kind of
pretty rare.
He's always been like the young millennial that comes on Weekend Update.
He's also himself.
Yeah.
He's himself. Just like,
yeah. But it's very like I find that very like him. So here's the advantage that he has had so far is he has surrounded himself with phenomenal actors and comedians. So when he's on Weekend Update, he's playing off of Jost and Shay. And there's a chemistry there, but because those three are friends. So there's a chemistry there between those three guys. In this one, he surrounds Bill Burr, who comes out of left field.
Bill Burr is amazing in this movie.
Bill Burr is great. Marissa Tomei is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So he's got these people around him that help him elevate. And that has been his... that's what I feel like a young comedian, a young actor needs to... people aren't going to come out and be Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp, Leonardo DiCaprio, those guys are once in a lifetime actors.
Sure.
Who just have that charisma and skill and ability, where I think some young actors and comedians kind of lose their footing is when they think they can do it by themselves right away. You know,
yeah.
When Jonah Hill didn't start off as Jonah Hill, you know, Jonah Hill was the side guy in 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, he was the guy with the fish in the boots, or
he showed up in some like kind of like what, like early 2000s Animal House knockoff kind of comedies.
Yeah.
And you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he was, you know, just kind of a bit player until he kind of crossed paths
until Superbad.
Right.
You know, yeah. He has his kind of cameo in 40-Year-Old Virgin is amazing.
Yeah.
Like his delivery is great. But then he gets with Apatow. And here we are, like the dude got nominated for an Oscar, you know?
Yeah.
And I think having Judd Apatow, who you can like him or you can hate him, I think he's kind of like Pete Davidson, where he can be very divisive. But he's a fantastic comedian and he's a great scout of talent.
Mm-hmm.
So having him write and direct this was, something that needed to happen. I don't know if anybody else could have reined him in.
But to your point, Joe, so I'm looking at Freaks and Geeks. It doesn't look like Jonah Hill was on it. I thought he maybe did, but it's all the other people that are in these movies.
It's Rogan and
but
Franco.
Look at the cast of this, though, and listen to these people and see who they are today. But you've got Linda Cardellini,
yep.
John Francis Daly, James Franco, Sam Levine, Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, Martin Starr. Like these names.
Go look at the cast of is it Undeclared?
Yeah.
Go look at that one.
Yeah, it's
is that
it's,
that's even bigger.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
I never watched it, but yeah. You know, so Apatow, like you said, I think to your point, is a great scout of talent. And look at all the comedians, the people that have taken off since his early successes, like the 40-Year-Old Virgin. But yeah, I mean, but look at this movie and the way it starts off, you know? I mean, you're talking about him playing off other comedians and actors, which I don't disagree at all. But this movie starts off with him, by himself in a car contemplating killing himself.
Yeah.
And like from that moment on, I mean, that moment had my heart beating. Like, I didn't think he was going to die in the first scene, but still just his performance and the way that his acting in it, like, I mean, he's right there. It's just him in a car and man.
Yep.
It's what a way to start.
And even the way when he pulls himself out of it and he's, you know, the two car, it's not a bad accident from the way it looks, but it's an accident nonetheless. And he's just like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then like immediately puts his seatbelt on. Yeah. You know, like
at high speed, it sure would have been a bad accident.
Sure.
With a seatbelt.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you say you were getting Punch Drunk Love vibes.
Just, well, no, not the movie.
No,
but
no, no.
That was Sandler's breakout.
I'm getting Eternal Sunshine vibes. This Pete Davidson reminds me a lot of Jim Carrey in how he almost has like that rubbery face.
Okay.
You know,
but
like
but Jim Carrey did serious stuff before that, though.
I think Eternal Sunshine's his first. Maybe that's the one that everybody remembers, but he did like The Majestic and he did.
Right.
Truman Show.
Show, yeah.
Yeah, but Eternal Sunshine is the one that I think most people go back to.
Well, which is a great movie, but I just mean that Carrey proved he could act with stuff
like The Majestic
and The Truman Show. Like that. My only point, I'm just saying, like, I don't think Adam Sandler could act before Punch Drunk Love. Like, he was a comedian.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
and
yeah,
Punch
yeah.
Drunk Love was like, holy crap, this movie's amazing. And Sandler in this dark comedy, like, you know, that was my comparison, like, the tone of it. I'm not saying that a Judd Apatow movie felt like a Paul Thomas Anderson movie or anything.
I hear you. I get it. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, I was getting, just in the way that he moves and the way that he delivered lines, I was getting major Jim Carrey vibes.
Gotcha. Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, and then we cut to his friends getting stoned in a basement. And it's not, I mean, that scene is a pretty good idea of, like, where he is at this point, and his name is Scott, but we'll probably keep calling him Pete because that's just what we do.
But this is an Apatow scene. You get your Apatow
without
stuff
question.
Here.
You know, he's you can tell when he's with these group of people that he has, you know, you're focused on him. Like, even when they try to focus on the other characters, you're focused on Pete Davidson. And like, I love the scene, you know, he kind of gives this girl the nod and she's like, oh yeah, okay. And then they, you know, they jump into his bedroom and they go hook up. And this is another great scene where he's able to have these conversations. This felt real,
right?
You know, like a lot of these movies, just, you know, when you have two characters who are having a conversation, you know, they're reading a script, but the way he's delivering the dialogue here feels like you're sitting, you know, as weird as this sounds, you're sitting in a room with them and watching them have this conversation in real time.
Well, that's why I think his performance is so great. And I loved him in this movie is, I think the one word to describe it is truth.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of this he's pulling from his real life experiences, but look at how many people love The Way Back with Ben Affleck. And he's dealing, you know, I mean, he's tapping into the same thing that these actors that deal with real life things, like, you know, they're able to tap into them. And sometimes it can pull out a brilliant performance. And you could also try to do it and fail miserably. But in this movie, every time he talks, and whether it's him being goofy and silly, like, you know, we know he can do, or he's being serious, like in this moment, it's like he feels like a real person. And that's why this movie works, I think, so well, is the truth of his character. Like it's a combination of the writing by Judd Apatow and Pete Davidson's performance. And they just mesh together brilliantly.
Yeah, I agree. So then we're moving forward and we're learning more and more about Pete's life.
So let's run through. So basically he's a loser. He's like a college dropout, like an art school dropout or something, I think.
Yeah, you know, he's a high school dropout. He didn't get through high school.
Yeah, he didn't even get his he doesn't even have a GED.
Okay. So he lives at home with his mom. His sister, played by Judd Apatow's daughter, is going off to college and she's
is that who that was?
Yeah, it's Maude Apatow.
And she was in Funny People and all that stuff too, right? As a little girl.
The little girl, right.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, no, that's his real daughter. So, but, you know, she's going off to college and she's like, how are you going to survive without me? Like, you know, single mom, Marissa Tomei. He lost his dad in a similar situation. Pete Davidson's dad, of course, died during 9/11.
Yeah, if anything, in the movie, his dad dies in a less dramatic fashion.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So his real life dad died during 9/11. And this one, he died during a hotel fire. And so, but, you know, that that theme is going to carry on through the movie. A lot of it is about firefighters and who, you know, he finds his new family later on. But, you know, he's dealing with the loss of his dad. We can infer that he's acting out and he's, you know, a lot of his issues are stemming from that. But he has he has Crohn's disease. He's like, you know, he's just like got all these things going wrong with him and plenty of things to blame, you know, and be mad at the world about. But the main thing is he's like this loser living at home and he doesn't have any idea what he's going to do with his life. But his one passion that he does have is being a tattoo artist. That's what he wants to do. But his work is pretty much terrible.
It's not good. Yeah, it's not good. Yeah, and he's tattooing all of his buddies, and I do love the scene with the friend where he's like, look at this Barack Obama. Like, it doesn't look right.
You
like,
didn't even get Obama right. He's uneven.
I can't go to the barber shop. I can't hang out with my friends because of this tattoo. Like, this is terrible.
I love that he's used all his friends as canvases, and especially the little guy. He's used him like 20
Oscar.
Times.
No,
Igor.
Igor. Igor.
Igor. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, and so the sister's leaving, and of course the sister's like, please... please just be okay. And he's like, okay. You know, like he's not committing to anything because, you know, that's kind of what he does. And he even says to the girl that he's that he's hooking up with, where she's like, can we get past, like, I love this part, but can we move to something else? And he's has all of these excuses as to why. And it's not like
that's a funny line too, because like they grew up together as little kids, and so he's like, that would be like incest.
Yeah,
he's like, it's like you're my sister, and she's like, ew. But he's, I don't feel it as though he's trying to just keep it as them hooking up. Like he legitimately is terrified of a relationship, and of hurting her.
Yeah, of damaging her. I think he knows that he's chaos, and he doesn't want to pull her into it. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's being like, no, I just like this part. I don't want the touchy-feely stuff. Because when we get to the end, you know, he says some stuff that is very touching. And so we're getting even bigger, you know, more ideas of like what's going on. But yeah, the scene with the sister where the graduation party stuff where Marissa Tomei, who I think just said in an article, I shouldn't have taken the role as like the middle-aged mom.
Well, a lot. She took a bunch of roles. She kept doing it. Yeah, she's being typecast as a mom,
which is just insane, right? Like it's Marissa Tomei. You know, they go to this graduation party, and it's this very affluent Staten Island family, and they're, you know, the mom and dad are up there. And
so gross, those parents.
I know, so gross. where they're pouring praise and love over both of these girls, Scott's sister and their daughter, because I guess
it's like
they're pretty tight.
It's just ridiculous, though. The way they're like, oh and my God,
Pete's...
our daughter, blah blah blah, and yeah.
And Pete's commentary through the entire thing,
yeah.
Where like I kept expecting the guy standing next to him to be like, man, shut up. But they just let him go.
They just let him, yeah. But it's great because he's the surrogate. That is exactly... most people in their right mind would be like Pete Davidson, like, shut up.
Shut
what
up.
You
no, you, no, you know, lying.
Boy, how great was the view from their house, though?
I'm telling you.
No kidding.
I've never been to Staten Island, so I don't know what it looks like. But I have to assume that that's a legit thing. Like, the suburbs of Staten Island have these massive homes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, I think what it is that it's from what I can gather, like it seems like it's pretty working class, but there's probably this area where because of the views,
right.
They've built these very expensive homes. So like that's a very expensive home for Staten Island, but to get a house with a comparable view in Brooklyn might cost two or three times as much. And so it's like you're a big deal, but you're only a big deal in Staten Island. You know, and
right.
And the movie talks a lot about how Staten Island is kind of the borough that everybody takes a dump on and nobody has any respect for it. And just real quick to give you an idea, I did a quick Google of films set in Staten Island because I'm just like, okay. Oh, there are so many movies that take place in New York, right? Like,
yeah.
So you would expect a pretty large list. So, according to Wikipedia, they have 11 movies that have been set in Staten Island, one of them being this one. And
that's funny.
And I've only heard of two of them. I've heard of three as kind of a bank shot. There's one called Exiled, but it's a Law and Order movie, so I've heard of Law and Order.
It's a Law and Order movie.
But, like, that's, you know, I've heard of Law and Order because the president tweets about it constantly. But,
favorite show. One can only presume that's what he's doing is watching Law and Order.
I'm assuming, like, he's just a big fan of Dick Wolf.
Welcome back, Elliot Stabler.
Yeah. And, but the other movie that I had heard of is an art house movie with Sally Fields that came out a few years ago called Hello, My Name is Doris.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, the only movie that the average person would have heard of that's on this list, which I think says it all, The First Purge, which I believe is what they're watching in this movie.
It is. Marissa Tomei's exactly what in they're it. Watching. Yeah. No. Oh, it's Lena Headey.
What?
Marissa Tomei's not in The First Purge.
Oh, she's not? Is she in one of the Purges?
It's Lena Headey. Lena Headey's in the first one.
Oh, she is in The First Purge.
Marissa Tomei is?
Marissa Tomei's in The First Purge.
So, I mean the movie titled The First Purge, not
The
Purge. The
First
came.
Purge, yeah.
Yeah, not...
I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about...
Well, there's a
Ethan
movie
Hawk.
Called The Purge, which is the first one in the series,
of
but
course.
Then there's
That's
also
what I thought we were talking about.
In the series a film called The First Purge.
Yeah, literally.
And I'm referring to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. Okay, I'm with you.
The main action starts up when he and his buddies are at the park smoking weed and he's trying to convince people to do tattoos and these guys are just like, no, we're not doing any more tattoos. And this 9-year-old kid comes along and is like, yeah, I want a tattoo.
Yeah. And he's like, okay. And of course he gets through one line and the kid runs away. It makes sense.
But you know what? This is good exposition, too. We always talk about this, and we all know I hate lazy exposition, and I don't know who would enjoy it. But this movie is really good, too, because I think this movie shows you so much about Pete Davidson's character, not only through the things that he's telling you, but the way he acts. Anyone that thinks it's okay to tattoo a 9-year-old has no idea what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's not legal. Like, you can't...
I was glad this was like the mechanism to pull Bill Burr's character into the film, because when this scene ended, I was like, what am I watching right now? Because I'm like, if I'm supposed to like this guy and I'm like, this isn't funny. Like, this
yeah,
is
you
like,
can't get away with that. It's a child. Yeah. Like, it's not, you would go to jail for tattooing a child.
Right. And so like, and because it's Apatow, like I'm at this point in the film, I'm still like, I don't exactly know the tone that we're going for. Cause I'm like, you know, Apatow has always had these kind of man-child characters who do things that you shouldn't do, but they're still lovable and it's still funny within the context of that world, because that world isn't real, where this movie up to this point and throughout ultimately...
It's a grounded.
It feels movie. A lot more grounded than his other films, and
this is like Funny People.
This is very much like Funny People,
and I feel it's even more grounded than that. But
yeah,
sure.
But like, so if Seth Rogen tattoos a kid in 40, you know, in
Knocked Up.
There we go. Thank you. And Knocked Up, like, that has a different sheen to it, and I'd be more apt to roll with that and just be like, haha, that's funny. Not
it's
in real
silly.
Life, but in this movie, it's funny. But in this movie, I'm like, I'm honestly, like, I as a parent, I was kind of horrified.
Totally. That's what I mean. So I'm watching that, and I'm just like, that's not, I'm like, you're getting that this guy has no idea what he's doing. He's making terrible decisions, clearly, and he's doing this terrible thing. Like, you just can't do that. But that's a great way to pull Bill Burr in, like you said. And so Bill Burr is this kid's dad, and he goes to the to Pete Davidson's house, and Marissa Tomei answers the door, and he's just like letting her have it about him and where's your son.
The best part of that whole thing is when Pete Davidson comes around the corner and he sees the kid.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh shit, and turns around and walks away.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is tearing into it. And Bill Burr, I think, is probably one of the best comedians working today.
He is fantastic.
He has almost the same qualities that we are talking about with Pete Davidson, where he just feels real. You know, some of these comedians, I don't know, Dane Cook is the first one that comes to mind, where, like, his shtick is not...
Was this 2000?
Well, I mean, I just mean like
he's talking about Dane Cook.
Well, I mean, like his shtick, it was like you just felt like that wasn't him.
Sure.
You know, like he had a character on stage, right? This
sure,
super manic, high energy. Where Bill Burr feels like if you were to have a conversation with him,
he's real.
You're getting the guy from on stage. Is the same guy.
Go listen to Joe Rogan's podcast with Bill Burr to promote this movie. It's fantastic.
When they started talking about masks,
yeah,
is the best 2 minutes in podcasting besides the 31 minutes we've done so far.
it's a great episode. Go listen and you'll find out how real Burr is. He talks about his managers and how they'll screw you over and all the mistakes he's made, and he gives advice to young comedians and don't sign this deal, and if you're starting a podcast, don't sign it away because they're trying to screw you over. Like, he is so real and he's so funny.
He's very
funny.
He will
just say stuff. He has one of those natural timings where, of course, the best comedians, like, they don't have to feel like they're on all the time. It's not yuckety yuck, but you're just talking and they say the most hilarious stuff, and oh boy. So to not promote another podcast too much, but that is a great
also
interview.
Joe Rogan got himself in a little bit of trouble this week.
When he gets himself in trouble every week.
Yeah, but somebody said, given this has been a weird cancel week, like the floodgates opened. Not
so what do you say real quick?
Somebody, I guess there he was talking to Joey Diaz and somebody else, and one of them said that he wouldn't let female performers go up on stage unless they took care of business, if you catch my drift.
Ugh.
And there was laughter. So that kind of was the, you know, I'm telling
you. What, Joey Diaz said that or who said?
No, I think it was the other guy. And I don't remember who the other guy is. And honestly, I don't give a crap.
So he didn't correct him.
No.
So he's now in trouble.
Yeah.
Basically, like, he should have said, like, that's not. But I get what you mean. And that's obviously gross and you shouldn't say it. But, like, these are comedians. And Joe Rogan has the type of thing where people listen to him and he's got this huge deal and everything because he doesn't apologize and he's not politically correct. So he didn't say it, and I'm not going to necessarily say he should be canceled because he didn't correct a comedian making a joke, but yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, it's also been a weird week. Chris D'Elia got...
Well, that's his buddy, Chris D'Elia. Look at that.
Big trouble. Wrestling Corner, the wrestling world has blown up. Like, it was nuts. This in the last 3 days of how many wrestlers and promoters were the I think the hashtag was speaking out.
Jeez.
And it was bonkers.
Welcome to 2020. It's a weird year.
Yeah, well, that's you if you're a scumbag, you better get ready because
absolutely
it's coming your way, Tom.
So speaking of non-scumbags, so Bill Burr plays Ray, and Ray is a firefighter. So right off the bat, there's this connection to Pete's dad or Scott's dad in the movie, and that's clearly what we're going to get into, and that's what most of the movie is about. But he sees Marissa Tomei, and you know he's kind of like he does kind of a double take. You know, he's yelling
because it's Marissa Tomei,
right? No one's debating that. So you know he's you know chewing Scott out and saying how terrible he is and everything, but then you can kind of see he's like, oh hey, I'm Ray.
Yeah, right. I do love where the kid's like, no, I told him to do it, and he was like, yeah, thank you, all right,
go stand over there,
go stand. Yeah, he's like, go, don't talk back, don't get out of here.
Yeah,
but yeah, so we jump to the sister driving away. You know, Pete's smoking a vape on the couch. The sister and her friend have packed the car and they're leaving, and I do love where she's like, are you gonna help pack? And he's like oh yeah, okay, I'll be there. And she's like, no, it's fine, we're done. So he walks outside and the sister drives away, and she's like, please just be nice to mom. And Pete, it's something that I don't think he's an asshole, I just think he's incapable of being nice at this point in the movie. Like, he's just
he's
just so clueless.
He's likable in this movie because it's not malicious, he's not a jerk, he's a loser. Like, he's just like, and I don't mean that in a mean way, but what I mean is he just has no direction. He's dealing with all this crap. He thought about crashing his car in the first scene. He there's something inside of him broken.
Yes.
And he's trying to figure out how to be happy.
He has a very stunted growth. I mean, from a maturity standpoint, I mean, he's essentially 13. And so he has all the kind of selfishness that goes along with being 13.
Yeah, I'm I'm not middle-aged. I'm 24. I'm a 24-year-old man, and I'm going to my room because I want to, not because she's telling me to.
So Ray starts secretly dating Margie, who that's the mom played by Marissa Tomei.
They're constantly like, Pete would walk out of the house and then Ray would sneak in. Like, I mean, it's hilarious. Yeah, like, he's just constantly trying to walk, sneak around Scott at this point. And finally,
once they finally get together, like, Scott starts walking his kids to school. And
I loved the scene with him and the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, you get a moment of who this character probably is deep down.
Yeah.
It definitely helps make you like him because he is legitimately enjoying his time with these kids, but not being fake. He's still being him, but he's legitimately enjoying his interaction with the children.
Probably because he can relate to kids, right? Yeah. Because of his stunted growth. Like, he's closer to them at this point than adults. He feels more comfortable and he can talk to them about the things that he likes. You know, he likes to smoke weed and watch cartoons and just, you know, he can relate to these kids, maybe not the weed part, but, you know, the immaturity is helping him to bond with them, but it's also showing he is a good person. And, that's a really fun to see as that relationship goes. But so now, Ray, played by Bill Burr, wants to bond with him and start to be friends with him because he's dating this kid's mom.
Yeah.
So he invites him to a baseball game with the other firefighters.
And this was a fantastic scene. I mean, you got Steve Buscemi, who I think is a firefighter.
Former firefighter.
He was a firefighter. I mean, after 9/11, he actually went down to his old firehouse and suited up and worked for, I think, at least a month or two.
Yeah.
Like, he was a firefighter before he was an actor. So,
right.
I mean, that was his...
Yeah.
So they just start telling, you know, war stories, kind of. And then Pete Davidson, we get a very good, very heartfelt look into what he feels and what he's going through when he lost his dad. And, of course, all of the firefighters, Steve Buscemi asked the kid if he asked him if he wants a hot dog. He's like, no, I have Crohn's. And he's like, what's that? And he's like, yeah, it's a thing with the lining of your stomach where it makes you crap your pants all the time. And he's like, great, didn't need to know that, but okay. And he just kind of goes off about being a firefighter, and it puts a damper on the whole thing. But none of the firefighters there take offense to it because they all know it's kind of true.
Yeah, I think on some level they don't like to be reminded that that's a possibility. But I agree. I think they all know that he's not wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
And so. He goes home and is this where they kind of
he basically says I want to
kind of
he wants to try to break Ray and his mom up.
Scene.
He's,
oh no, well, he does go to the he gets the apprentice he goes to get that apprenticeship right with Machine Gun Kelly who's the tattoo artist.
There's a
and
D-bag
this was
for
a great scene. This was a great what'd you say?
There's a D-bag for you.
Yeah, I agree. This is a great scene where like the guy's tattooing and
you see he's dating Megan Fox.
I mean, good for him. I mean, you know, it's Megan
he's
Fox.
He's another one of those that just must be slanging it.
He's the new Fez from that 70s show. Like, if you look at Fez's like history or Justin Timberlake, you're like, wow, all right.
Yeah.
I think it's another thing where it's just a cultural like divide in terms of young and old people. Because I will also say, I meant to bring this up earlier, that I have a 15-year-old son and a 13-year-old stepdaughter, and when I was watching this movie, they were both like, oh, the new Pete Davidson movie, can I watch? Both of them.
Uh-huh.
And they never...
I absolutely believe that.
They almost never asked to watch the movies with me. And I don't know, outside of horror films, Sydney never wants to watch any of the films, so the fact that she wanted to watch a non-horror movie says a lot about his appeal with a certain age demographic.
Sure. I agree.
So he doesn't get the apprenticeship because, like, Machine Gun Kelly's going to have him just, like, taking out trash and doing dirty work. He's like, I'm not doing this. This is stupid. So he goes to get a job as a waiter, and they show him.
I love the making fun of the guy's tattoos, like, to his face.
Oh, yeah. He's got, like, a white supremacist guy.
Yeah, he's like, so the guy came in and said, I wanted to get the Grim Reaper with a Confederate flag wrapped around it. We could just tell him to F off, right? And the guy's like, what? But yeah, he goes to the guy. This guy was also what was this guy on? This guy was on was he on Malcolm in the Middle?
What's that?
He was the guy that runs this restaurant. He's somebody's brother on a show. And maybe it was that Donald Loge show Was it Grounded for Life?
I don't know. I never watched it.
He's out on Grounded for Life because I'm currently rewatching that with the kids.
Oh, okay. It's a great show.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about... you're talking about... I was thinking about the restaurant manager, the black guy. You're talking about the white guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was on Grounded for Life. That's... he was Uncle Eddie. He's also...
Kevin Corrigan.
Yeah, he was... I mean, he had a small role in Superbad.
Yes.
The guy
that
drives him to the party. And he's in Goodfellas.
The guy that hits him with the car?
He's like the guy that picks him up and takes him to the house party.
I don't think that's... Because that guy is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. The guy that hits him with the car, and he's like, it's okay, I'm a cool guy. I have a couple non-violent felonies. That's the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But he's also the brother in Grounded for Life, yes. He gets this job... And it's not the greatest, right? But it's a job because he needs the money because
they're gonna kick him out of the house.
They're gonna kick him out of the house.
Work.
This is so he has to like fight for tips, and which is just insane. Like they're putting on Hulk hands and
yeah, it's Fight Club for tips.
Yeah. Finally, he realizes that they go to the college to see his sister, and they have this great time, and like as. He's incapable of having happy moments, like, and let them be, right? So at the end of the day, he is talking to his sister, and he's like, we're going to break him up, right? And the sister's like, no, like, leave her alone. She's happy. And he's like, no, I got it. And she's like, please don't do anything dumb, you know? And here's the other, like, I'm not sure what time of year this movie takes place anymore because
yeah, it's a weird. Timeline doesn't make sense really with it.
I feel like finally we get to like October, and because the sister's having a Halloween party, but it still very much looks like it's warm in Staten Island, and
they're not wearing any coats or anything on Staten Island. Yeah, it doesn't make sense with the weather and
I
stuff.
I feel like
so.
It'd be pretty chilly. So
it's not always cold on Halloween. You do have.
I just mean like in New York.
In New York, though, in October, that's pretty cold.
So he goes and talks to the ex-wife, and he sits down, and he is Ray's ex-wife, yeah, who was also a very funny comedian. She's been on a couple shows. I think she had her own show one point on FX.
Is that Pamela Adlon?
Bobby Hill, and the therapist on This Is Us, and she's on a lot of Louis C.K. shows. Yeah.
The only reason I recognize that is because we talked about her on a few episodes back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
she's in Grease too,
right?
She is
that's
in
why.
Grease
yeah.
Too. Yes.
Yeah.
So he goes back, and I guess he tells, because you never see this happen. I guess he tells his mom all of this stuff that's bad. Because while he's in the backyard, here comes Ray, and they go at each other. Like it's. I take this back. Ray beats him. Doesn't. No, you know what? That's not fair. Ray never lays a hand on him.
No, Ray's very mature about it because
he's on the defensive and he takes him down defensively, but never punches him, never does anything.
Throws him in the pool.
Yeah, throws him in the pool.
Cools him off. And he's like, sorry. He's like, I had to do that because you were getting out of hand. And like, right. He handles it very maturely because he knows Scott's got a lot of anger. And this kid is just trying to take it out on somebody. And he's the target because he's dating his mom. And yeah, I really like how he handled this. But unfortunately, Marissa Tomei comes in. And when, you know, no matter who started it, when you guy choking your son out, it's just, you know.
Well, he wasn't. He just kind of, he was pinning his arms down and making,
but he's still in a physical altercation with him.
You are right.
Yeah.
he is on top of Pete Davidson and like screaming at him to stop. So, and Marissa Tomei says, that's it. We're done.
Well, she's like, you get out of here and sends Scott away. Yeah. She's like, you too.
Oh, wait. so this is, Scott is trying to find somewhere to go. We should say that his friends all get put in jail in a very funny scene who I think was the pharmacy
Robert
owner
Smigel.
Was Rob Smigel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little SNL connection there.
Yeah, big time.
Triumph the insult comic dog.
That scene was crazy. Just like, that was a stressful scene. This stressed me out so bad and very funny, though, at the same time. But they asked Scott to be the lookout. And so, because he doesn't really want to do this, but he needs money. And so he's like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And they all go to rob this drugstore so that they can sell the drugs that they rob. And like the owner is there and he has a gun. And
so it's not really Scott's fault. Like he was looking out because the guy was inside the place.
No, that's stupid. Like, I didn't like, I get that if you were them, you'd be mad at him because, of course, you're trying to blame someone else. But logically, as the viewer,
as the lookout, he wouldn't have been able to tip them off about that, whether he was paying attention or not.
But the movie even sets it up like he's playing on his phone, not doing his lookout job, which technically he wasn't.
Right.
But he could have not stopped that as well. So it's kind of one of those weird things where they set him up as goofing off, but then. Yeah, what's he going to do? Say, oh, yeah, there's a guy shooting at you. Look out. Like, it's, so he ends up shooting one of the guys.
So, yeah, so all of his buddies get put in jail. And he goes to his buddy in jail. And he's like, hey, you know, can I stay at your house? And he's like, no, you can't. He's like, you got us put in here. It's like, well, he didn't. Then there's the running gag of...
Do they record those calls?
Those calls, I don't think they do.
I know they do when you call out, but when you're at the window, because in movies and TV, they're always saying incriminating crap during those window scenes, and I can't ever remember which one they record.
If you use like an actual telephone inside the jail to call outside lines, yes. Those are recorded.
But they don't...
You would be shocked.
At what people say on those?
And they tell you. This call is being recorded.
Like they tap in every minute or whatever. Yeah.
So many cases where they're just like, no, we have the confession on the phone, on the jailhouse phone. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
All the time. So there's the running gag that Oscar is being catfished by this girl that he met on Tinder.
Igor.
And they're like, oh, no, those are fake pictures. And then, of course, there's the girl sitting there talking to Oscar. And they're like, oh, wow. Like,
good for him.
Igor.
Yeah. So then he goes
to Kelsey, the girl that he's been hooking up with.
They have already split up at this point.
Yeah.
She said no. So they hook up again.
That scene at the restaurant was pretty funny, though, where she's on a date, like a blind, like a phone app, dating app, whatever. Yeah. And so like she goes there because she knows Scott works there and she's trying to make him jealous. And he's just like, OK, I'll go get your food. And she gets mad at him. She's like, what is wrong with you?
Why are you not getting mad?
Yeah, and then she just blows that guy off. She's like, she's like, I don't care about him. He'll figure it out.
He goes, what do I tell your date? She's like, I don't know. I met him 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
he ruins that relationship where he kind of says, can I crash here for a couple days, a couple months, a couple weeks? And he ruins that one. Like, she's into him for whatever reason. but he ruins that. So he has to go to the firehouse. And this is, I mean, I'll blow through this part. This is the growing up part.
Montage.
Yeah. Where he's working in the firehouse.
Steve Buscemi's like, yeah, he can stay here. And then basically like, what, you think
he's
going to stay here for free?
Are you making me a fireman
now? Go clean toilets. And I like how there's guys standing there watching him clean toilets. Good job. Or you missed a spot. It's a really funny montage.
And you also get an idea of the bond that firemen have that work in a house where like Pete's wakes up the next day and he's like, you know, people are like, good morning, how are you? There's this massive black dude that comes out of the shower, like looking at Pete. And he was just like, oh, you're so-and-so's kid. He's like, yeah. He's like, yep, I'm sorry. You know, he just kind of goes on, gives this little, you know, he's sitting there in nothing but a very small towel. And Pete's just like, okay, thank you very much.
We find out that some of these firemen actually knew his dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Or crossed paths with his dad. Yeah, and Steve Buscemi is like an older firefighter. So he does have some war stories about his dad that he kind of keeps to himself the entire time because he doesn't want to freak Pete out, Scott out, whatever. And so he starts to grow up a little bit.
And Ray starts to warm up to him.
Yeah. And finally, like, he goes on a call with them and he sees what they do. And it's, I mean, I don't, with everything that's going on in the world right now, I think firefighters are just like, yeah, we're just going to keep doing our job. And we don't, you know, like it's just one of those, it's one of those services in public service that people, you'd never get mad at a firefighter.
Well, like they're very underappreciated. They're not paid that well. They work long hours. They have to live at the firehouse and wake up to go on calls when the bell goes off. And like, they risk their lives. It's a very underappreciated job and they're very important. They go on EMS calls and all that stuff. But they don't get a lot of crap. But if you've seen what they do or if you know what they do, it's a very tough job. But he sees that. And so, he starts to appreciate what Ray does and puts his life on the line, just like his dad does. And they eventually bond and Ray finds out that his aspiration is to be a tattoo artist. And so he's like, oh, just do it on me. Do it on my back. I'm not going to see it anyway. And we later on find out, like, he ends up tattooing his entire back full of the craziest,
garbage
random
tattoos.
The random stuff. Yeah. And it is hilarious when they eventually see all the different stuff.
Well, I think one of the turning points is Ray is walking his son to school, and he shows a piece of artwork that so he created. The son creates this superhero, and Pete designs him, like draws a picture of him. And Ray's that's the turning point for Ray, is like, he actually is pretty good at drawing, maybe not tattooing, but drawing is a different story. So, they have this night out, they have this big fire, they go to this night out, and Pete starts, or whatever, he starts getting stories about his dad that make his dad less of a saint, but as a human. His mom only told him stories that made his dad sound like this perfect being, where these other guys are like, yeah, he was a good dude, but he's very much like you, right? Like, he was crazy. He would do crazy things. He was so funny. They tell the story about his dad being coked up. And I love where, like, Ray's like, no, don't tell him that story. And Pete's like, no, please tell me that story. Like, my entire life, he's been this omnipotent being. So getting to hear stories about his dad being normal is a good thing, right? And after that night, you know, like we said, they go on this other call, they have this bonding moment, and then here comes this guy, I think, is also kind of a YouTube star. This big old heavyset dude that walks up, I think he's a chef.
Okay, I'm not familiar with him.
I think. And he comes up with, like, a wound, and Pete's like, I can't help you. He's like, no. Like, he's giving all of these excuses as to why he's not stabbed or shot. Ran into just a weed whacker.
Yeah.
Or something, you know, just the,
like, clearly
stuff.
It's a criminal reason, and everyone knows that if you call the, you know, 911 with a gunshot wound, like, the police are going to get involved.
Yeah, right,
so he's like,
right,
you got to help me. And he's like, I can't, I don't, I'm
he's
not
like,
even...
I am so high right now. He's like, it's cool. So am I. So they
take him to the ER.
Right. They take him to the ER. They're not getting anywhere. Like, this guy is losing. I do love that Pete stole an ambulance and drove the ambulance to the ER.
But he's in the waiting room. And this is pretty much it's a great commentary on ERs, because you go with a quote unquote emergency and you could wait in the waiting room for 2-3 hours. And this guy's got a gunshot wound
he's
and he's like, which, you know, would never happen really in real life. But it's a funny commentary.
It could be in Staten Island.
I'm just saying, if you have a gunshot wound.
I guess he calls Ray, and Ray jumps to the scene. He gets there. They take him back, and they get the guy, you know, around the corner. Here comes Marissa Tomei, because she's an ER nurse, and they get him into a room. And
Pete Davidson's real mom, I believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she plays one of the nurses. I believe
she's
the
nurse
one standing
well?
There watching, like, when Marissa Tomei's doing her thing. She's just kind of standing there. Yeah, it's Pete Davidson. It's like a cameo for his mom.
That's fun.
And his grandpa plays his grandpa, too, in the movie.
Well, that makes sense, because that guy was great.
Yeah,
He was like, did you know who went to Kyle? Blah, blah.
Yeah.
She's like, so I shouldn't go? He's like, no, you'll have a great time. so they had this other bonding moment where Marissa Tomei kind of realizes that they've both matured at this point. And the end of the movie is, I mean, it's a fantastic end, because it's how this movie should end, right?
It's a great ending.
Kelsey, the girl that he's into, is taking the city planning test, because she wants to help build up Staten Island.
The mom and Ray are still broken up, but she sees that Ray let Scott tattoo his whole back, and he did a family portrait of them. And so, which is a really sweet moment and a really, really nice.
And he did a picture of his dad. That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah. There's
the thing on his shoulder is a picture of Pete's dad.
Right. There's a bunch of crazy random crap, but a really nice moment where he draws all of them like a family together. And anyway, it's a really sweet moment.
Yes,
so
I agree.
They're back together now. And
I hope they get back to better back together, because he tattooed it on his back.
So he finds Kelsey, who's getting on the ferry to go to the city. And he says, look, I just want to ride with you. Like, I want to hang out with you. I'm going to help you.
She's like, I can't stop you.
And she's like, okay, I guess. So they're sitting there, and it's very awkward. And finally he said, you know, they're going over this testing. And finally he says, I love you. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And she kisses him, and it's not like, let's hook up kiss. Like it's a
no grease two kiss.
It's no grease two kiss, but it's a very emotional kiss.
It's a sweet moment.
You know, it's a very sweet moment.
He's matured a lot since the beginning of the movie, and he finally says how he really feels, which is what she's been waiting to hear this whole time. And
yes,
but they leave it at that.
And well, yeah, it's him in the city. And to me, I feel like the next step is he's going to SNL.
I don't know.
Right? Like he's got like 3.5 hours. I feel like he's in the big city for the first time.
But Pete Davidson started doing stand up when he was 16, you know, and so they substituted a tattoo artist. I'm guessing maybe he'll finally go get a real apprenticeship, will become a tattoo artist. I think tattoo artist just replaces SNL. So I don't think this is supposed to tie straight into it. But
I guess that makes sense.
It is a nice moment where he's in New York. He's looking around in a great, great, perfect song, The Pursuit of Happiness by Kid Cudi, starts playing. What an amazing outro. I mean, Kid Cudi's awesome. That song is fantastic. When that hit with this song, The Pursuit of Happiness, that he's been chasing, Scott's been chasing this pursuit the entire movie. I thought that was a brilliant way to end it, and it just cuts to black.
And that's how it should have ended.
It's great. A great movie.
Yeah.
Like
because he does kind of get the happy ending. Like the family unit is starting to come together. And you can just infer with it what you will.
Yeah. And he finds things to make him happy, though. He's been looking and searching for it the whole time. And he's got his family back together. He's got this new family with the firefighters. He's got the girlfriend now. He's got purpose. He's going to go try to actually get a real job and pursue his dreams. Like, we've seen the guy grow a lot. Like, this movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes. Judd Apatow does long movies. But it's...
That, I feel like, is not, like, in current film, though.
Comedies.
I feel like that's the average length.
Comedies aren't generally this long.
Yeah, comedies are normally 90 minutes to an hour 45. Like,
okay.
220 for comedies. And, you know, I mean, he always takes this rap, and it's just kind of what he does. But I also think there are some things that could have gone away.
Yeah.
But that could have tightened it up. Like, the whole boxing for tips thing, I don't feel like it really went anywhere.
That felt like an Apatow flick.
Yeah, it wasn't that funny, and it didn't really add much or anything. So like it could have totally been lost, and I don't think the movie would have suffered. But
sure.
But he also likes to create these kind of rich lived in worlds, and so you need some time to do that as well. So
yeah,
but
I think it helps this movie. I don't think it was overly long. I'm not saying there's nothing you could have cut.
Yeah.
But again, we went on quite the journey of growth for Scott's character, and I think that
over what we assume is 6 to 7 months.
Yeah.
Like I think, because I mean she graduates college. The next scene she's going away to college. That's not a thing. Like, she wouldn't go away until August.
Well, if you're going to move in and get settled or whatever,
move-in is in August.
He works at his college. He would know.
Move-in starts in August.
Right. But, I mean, you could still... I'm just saying, if she went early, maybe she got a house there or something, and she was going to, like, get a job.
She's a freshman. She has to live on campus.
Well, that's
not every
school.
That's not.
But still, like, yeah. But I think 6 to 7 months, yeah. So, yeah, if this had been 90 minutes, it also would have felt like a sitcom where everything's wrapped up happily with a bow, and that's not what they're going for either.
No.
So, but, yeah, overall, I like the movie a lot.
I think it's one of Apatow's best films. I think
it is. I agree.
It's in that same tone as Funny People, and I think it is even more mature. It's probably his most mature film ever, and I think it tackles very real subject matter, and Pete Davidson really nails it. Like I said, I think I'll look at him differently from now on, and I really hope that he continues to do things. Even though this was close to his life, like Tom said, I would really love to see him in more challenging roles and doing great work like this.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table, and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Wherever you're getting your podcast from, be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up on the next one, what's this? Another new release? Yes, you are.
Don't
right.
get used to it, folks.
Yeah. But we're going to tackle this new Spike Lee movie, To Five Bloods. So thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Skeletor kills the mercenaries. People told me slow my roll. I'm screaming out that I'm going to do just what I want. Looking ahead, no turning back. If I fall, if I die, no.
I lived it to the fullest. If I fall, if I die, know I lived and missed some bullets. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything will shine. Ain't always gonna be gold. I'll be fine once again.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.